thank you. Hi, so I'm Lilia Profaito, and I'm a postdoc in Cologne. I'm working with Michael Lessig. And I'm interested in population genetics and using experimental evolution to test theories of population genetics, but also the other way around. So perhaps today I can tell you a little bit of how experimental evolution can then, or experiments in an evolutionary context can then help make better theories. So first I'd like to acknowledge the people that did this work with me. Of course, Michael, who supported me all the way and worked on this problem with me the whole way. Karin, who hosted me in her lab and helped me learn many of the techniques to do the experiments I'll show you. Stefan and Johannes, who helped with building the model that I'll show you, and especially Stefan did much of the model analysis, and he'll be here in a couple of weeks, and maybe some of you may want to talk to him as well. So when I went to Cologne and I wanted to do this project, my question was slightly different from the one I ended up answering. And what I wanted to know was, what was the distribution of fitness effects in regulatory mutations? We have very nice biophysical models that can predict how this distribution should look like. And I chose a very nice system where everything, we thought we knew most of what was relevant for it. But as it turns out, biology was a little bit more complicated. And this is if anyone here did experiments, they know that this is a general theme. And we can either find a better system with which to answer our question, a simpler system, or we can try to address whatever is more complicated in our first choice. And this is what I did. So, and in doing so, I think I uncovered some slightly new things that were not there. We wouldn't expect them in the beginning. And this has to do with what has been a general theme in some of the talks we've seen in the past few weeks, which is the question of fitness landscapes. And in particular, I'd like to try to show you that we gain something by really incorporating mechanistic and phenotypic details into these fitness landscapes. So it's quite clear that phenotypes are shaped by evolution. So natural selection acts upon genes and their frequencies, and that changes phenotypes that we observe. But of course, the fitness landscape itself, so the fitnesses that we measure, are related to the underlying phenotypes, to the underlying biology. So the natural selection cannot choose from everything that it can possibly exist in the universe. There's only these few phenotypes that the organisms have. So we can ask the question of not just looking at the fitness landscape that depends on genes, but the fitness landscape that depends on phenotypes. And that will perhaps help us to introduce the environment in some way that we can learn something from it. In particular, I spent much of my PhD trying to understand the speed of adaptation and what is the distribution of fitness effects of beneficial mutations. But what I could never tell, and as a biologist it was important, is where in those distributions, where the different mechanisms of biology, where the different classes of genes, where do they fit in this distribution? And in fact, would it be helpful for us to predict or explain the distribution of fitness of mutations if we knew the underlying mechanisms that give rise to you, the biological mechanisms that give rise to it? And of course, if we don't incorporate phenotypes, we will never be able to predict the evolution of a particular phenotype, say transcription regulation, or we need to know the details if we want to predict that particular feature. And this is within the framework of what Dean and Thornton called the functional synthesis. So this is not an alone. More people are thinking about this in this way. Just to give you an example more precise of what I told you about, so half my PhD was to draw this picture. And as I told you, as a as a biologist, I always wondered where we, so these are mutations that the frequency of mutations which give a certain selective advantage to E. coli in the lab. We have statistical reasons to think that the distribution does look something like this, not just in E. coli, but in other organisms. But we don't know what sort of mutations are more frequent, which types of phenotypes they affect. In the same way, the epistasis patterns we see, we don't know what causes them. We don't know. The shape of the underlying genetic network should give us these patterns of epistasis, but we really don't know how in most cases. And again, I emphasize that it's important to tell how the functional categories of genes are distributed along these distributions.
So these are all positive effects?
These are only positive effects, yes. Fitness increases, yes.
So is this just a plotting thing, or are the there's zeros between the histograms? That's just the way you plot it?
These are beans. I'm not sure what
the
zeros.
Okay.
Could you explain the second plot?
So this is just the distribution of epistatic effects between particular alleles in E. coli.
So and this. What is the meaning of the numbers? Say, 0.03 is what?
It's the deviation from an edit. So these are double mutations. It's the deviation from the additive expectation.
Normalized to.
So the fitness is measured in competition with some reference, and the double mutants would be expected to have would be the sum of the two selection coefficients of the single mutants. This is the deviation from that, simply.
So I just don't understand but it doesn't look like the same scale as the scale of selective effects, right? Which were order of say 2%, right?
Okay. Sorry. No, it's not the same mutations at all. So these are deleterious mutations, and these are beneficial mutations in different experiments.
So the fact that the distribution is shifted a little bit to the right of zero means that if you do two deleterious effects, the total effect is bigger than the sum of the individual ones.
Less deleterious.
Yes. So this is I followed this work, but it's not my work, maybe we'll Isabel will be here in a couple of weeks, and she was my PhD supervisor, and she will probably tell you more about this. But yeah, this is an example where we find positive epistasis between deleterious mutations. And my point was just that it would be helpful to know the underlying biology that generates this pattern.
And positive means the effect of the sum is less than the effect of the sum of the individual ones.
The actual observed double mutant has a higher fitness than the expected.
Okay.
That's what positive means.
More.
Less.
Than less.
No, less than
less. Less deleterious. I'm sorry, this is just a matter of how you say it, but it's positive because the double mutant has a higher fitness than expected. Since these are deleterious, that means antagonistic epistasis.
A question related to all these things.
Yeah.
When you write this SA on the x-axis, actually you have a model for the fixed landscape, which is a multiplicative additive, because this
yes.
S is a parameter that belongs actually to the model, to this functional expression. Can you write it?
Single mutants, which is what's plotted here, this is just the difference in growth rates to the mean of the population in this case. Okay. Here, it's taking a measure like this, an S measured like this, the difference in growth rate to a reference, and then just adding them. So it's an additive model on the growth rate, multiplicative on fitness.
Back to the first one.
This one I can say.
You probably explained that I missed it. So these positive effect mutations?
Yes.
And there are also negative effect mutations?
The method could not see deleterious mutations.
But you have some feeling for, say, the fraction of positive versus negative?
So I measure the rate here for positive, and other people measure the rates for deleterious. And in E. coli, it seems that deleterious mutations are 10 times more frequent than beneficial ones in the lab environment.
10 times?
So Kibot and Lynch, this is the deleterious one, is 10 to the minus 4. And this, for the beneficial one, 10 to the minus 5 that I estimated.
Beneficial. I thought that the latest estimates of the fraction of beneficial mutation was in the order of 1%, which is roughly a thousandfold up from what people thought 10 years ago.
1% in relation to, so the basal mutation.
Fraction. I'm not talking about fitness effects out, but if you count the number of beneficial mutations and the number of deleterious mutations, irrespective of the magnitude of the deleterious or beneficial effect, then say the latest estimates suggest that 1 in 100 mutations are beneficial.
So 1 in 100, but the 100 are total mutations or just deleterious? Total mutations. So that also fits here.
So
10 to the minus 3 is the neutral mutation or the overall mutation rate estimated, 10 to the minus 4. Is the overall deleterious estimated rate, and 10 to the minus 5 is what I estimated. Yeah.
It's possible.
But there aren't, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure I know this work, maybe not.
Are statements of that sort intrinsically a bit ill-defined, because most of them are near neutral, and then it really depends on where you set the cutoff.
That's right, and it very much depends on the environment and engineering.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so to put some function into this, some mechanism into this, as I told you, I went into trying to. So one of the easiest ways to separate mutations into two classes is coding mutations and regulatory mutations. And in particular, so I focused on regulatory mutations because these are expected to affect less phenotypes. So maybe we can understand them a little bit better. Particularly any mutation in, say, a promoter or any mutation that just affects the regulation of a gene is expected only to affect the abundances of RNA and protein, at least in principle. And as I told you also, we have reasonable biophysical models, at least for one transcription factor and one binding site and more. We have reasonable models to predict how mutations here will affect the concentration of protein. What we don't know so much is how the protein concentration affects fitness, because of course then what natural selection will be acting upon, so what phenotypes natural selection will be acting upon when protein concentration is changed. And this is just a toy cartoon, but we can think that maybe this mapping between protein concentration and fitness looks something like this. So if we see a particular coding sequence in a gene, we can think that having a little bit of that protein is beneficial because in some environment. Because if it wasn't, then we wouldn't see probably this gene because it would be eroded by mutation and drift. But we can also think that probably there is an optimum rate of protein production after which fitness decreases with increasing protein concentration, and that is also likely because we see many, many genes which are repressed, especially in E. coli. So that really tells us that if those genes were on all the time, they would be deleterious. But of course, this could be one environment where there could be some fitness landscape like this, but that could be another environment where the protein is, for example, deleterious all the time, and we would like to know a little bit more, and if we can make generalizations about this.
Doesn't Uri alone has done this for LAC-Z?
Yeah, but actually I'm going to talk about that in a bit. Yeah, but the point is we need to know, well, we'd like to know general rules about how this works and especially how it changes with the environment as well. Yeah, and also, of course, if more than one phenotype is being affected by protein concentration, how do these phenotypes interact and how do they get combined to put a certain selection on a regulatory mutation, for example. And yeah, for example, the interactions with the environment, as I said, could be related, for example, if this protein is an enzyme, the types of substrates for this enzyme that are around. And yeah, so this is the model I chose because it's the most well-known, or it was certainly the first regulatory system to be described. So it's the lactoprone of E. coli. It's called lac because it allows bacteria or E. coli to use lactose as a carbon source. Without it, they cannot grow on lactose. They cannot grow when lactose is the only carbon source. And the lactoprone codes for three genes, like Z, like Y, and like A. They are all co-transcribed into the same messenger RNA, and this is important to keep in mind. So any change that would affect the regulation of RNA transcription will affect all of them in the same way. So they are expressed differently, but always in proportion to each other. And so LacZ is the protein that allows the bacteria to convert lactose into other sugars, which they can directly use in the central metabolism. LacY is a permease that it's a membrane protein, and it allows the entry of lactose and other similar galactosides into the cell. And LacA, its function is not clearly known. It cannot act on lactose. It seems to do something to IPTG, but it's not really very well described, even after so long that these genes have been known. So the lactoprone, if there is no lactose or IPTG is another type of inducer, I forgot to say, we'll get to that. So if there is no lactose or none of these galactosides in the environment, the lactoprone is repressed. There is a little bit of transcription, but very little. And it's repressed because this molecule LacI, which is the lac repressor, it's coded somewhere else in the genome by a different promoter. So this molecule, this protein binds to the lac repressor binding sites. There are three, but I just want you to keep in mind that the most important one is right at the beginning of transcription. And if this one is not here, there is no repression by the lac repressor. So the lac repressor binds to when there are no lactose or the other galactosides in the medium. The lac repressor binds to its binding site and represses transcription. When there is, for example, lactose in the environment or IPTG, and I'm going to talk a lot about IPTG, when this molecule is present in the environment, it enters the cell, it enters through other channels, but the lac permease is really able to concentrate IPTG inside the cell to very high concentrations, much higher than the external concentration. And so IPTG enters the cell, it binds to the lac repressor molecules, and there are very few of them, so this is a very, you don't need a lot of IPTG, you get immediately binding of all the lac repressor molecules. So when that happens, then the lac repressor is no longer able to bind to DNA, and the lactoprone is highly transcribed. Okay. So the relevant phenotypes here for cis regulatory, for the effects of cis regulatory mutations, are protein concentration, so the amount of protein expression that there is, and this can be manipulated by changes in the lac repressor binding site, as I will show you. And a very important point is that it's very easy to monitor the amounts of LacZ inside the cell. So this will be, throughout the rest that I'm going to tell you, I followed the concentration of this protein inside the cell as a reporter for the entire operon. As I said, that's because any change that affects the transcription of one affects the others, because as long as it's upstream. And the other phenotype that's relevant here is protein activity. And in particular, I'm going to talk about the protein activity of the LAC permease, LAC Y. And as I said, so I'm not going to use lactose. I did later, and we can talk about it later. But so lactose can be used as a carbon source. So when there is lactose, fitness of the E. coli is increased. It can grow faster. But IPTG cannot be used because it's not a substrate for LACZ, so it cannot be used as a carbon source. So I used IPTG and not lactose in order to disentangle these two things of cost and benefit. And I'm going to look at the cost of gene expression. So all the mutations I'm going to talk to you about are deleterious. This is an important point as well. And so the protein activity and the cost associated with protein activity can be manipulated just by changing the external amount of IPTG, which is, as I said, a substrate for the LAC permease.
Sorry. Yeah. I didn't understand why, per definition, all mutations are going to be deleterious.
Because deleterious or neutral, okay? Beginneth, I couldn't tell you. Because, so without lactose, there is no benefit known affect the related to the expression of these proteins. So IPTG has no benefit.
But I mean, the native strain still expresses a bit, so maybe if you make it even less, it's beneficial, no?
From what I'll show you next, I would say probably not, no, because it's these tiny amounts don't seem to affect fitness much. So I have a competition between a mutant that doesn't have the coding, any of the LAC operon, and the wild type when it's fully repressed, and they have the same fitness as far as I can tell. So these small amounts are not deleterious. Yeah. And so, as I told you, I built. Let me just go back one my slide. So I built mutants right here. So this is a 21 base pair binding site. I left the first base intact in all the mutants because it's the first base of the messenger RNA, so it's the start of transcription. And I mutated the other 20. And I mutated them in different ways. There are three mutants which have all of the 20 bases mutated. So they are constitutive, and I'll show you that. And the others are single nucleotide substitutions in that site. So as I told you, I followed LAC-Z expression, and I can tell you more details about the assay, but it's something that's widely used. It just measures the amount of LAC-Z that is inside the cell, and it does so by measuring how fast the cells are able to hydrolyze a compound that has a color when it's hydrolyzed. So it's just that simple, and it tells you the amount of LAC-Z inside the cell as long as the coding sequence is the same, which it is in the mutants. And please note this is a log scale, so just keep that in mind when looking at these differences. This is the wild type. And the blue bars are always in the general medium that I use, which is minimal medium with 0.1% glycerol. Glycerol is a poor carbon source. So they grow, they have a doubling time of about 90 minutes or 100. So just plain medium with this glycerol, the expression of the wild type is very low. When 1 millimolar of IPTG is added, now this concentration is enough to fully express the operon. So as I told you, IPTG binds to the LAC repressor. The LAC repressor can no longer bind DNA, and expression is maximum. So when that is added, then the wild type has about a 1,000-fold increase in expression. So this is the wild type system. And then for the different mutants, as you can see, the ones where I replaced all the 20 base pairs of the binding site, they have no repression. I should say also these are chromosomal mutants. This is not in a plasmid, it's in the native site where it has really wild-type levels of expression. As I was saying, the constitutive mutants do not respond to IPTG as expected, at least where the expression is concerned. But as you may also see, they have different expressions. So replacing the LAC repressor binding site affects expression both in the present, in the absence of IPTG, as you would expect, because the cells are no longer repressed. But it also affects expression in the presence of IPTG. So even when the LAC repressor is not there, mutations in the LAC repressor binding site affect expression. And this is important to keep in mind.
But that's because it probably goes in the mRNA, right? I mean, it probably affects folding and so on.
Yes, possibly. So I can tell you a bit more. So it's the first 20 bases of the RNA. I did a little bit of playing around with some simple folding program for mRNA, but there was no correlation with expression. But I'm not very good at that, so I don't know. It could also be, I read in other papers, that it's the beginning of the messenger RNA, the sequence there, is important for the LAC polymerase action. So it may fall more or less from the mRNA if it has a certain sequence or another. No? Watch it.
Preferences?
Okay. Sorry. Okay.
And then off. You click on off.
Ah, okay. I see. Doesn't... If I close here, is that a...
That's not click on off.
So it doesn't work. No, no.
But you can't. It's locked.
I know. Okay. Locked. Okay, so
good. Okay. Sorry about that. It's not my laptop. Right, so I don't know why that is, but it is. that's a fact that I want you to keep in mind, because it turns out it will be useful later. So mutations in this site apparently are affecting two codes. One, which is related to the LAC repressor binding, and another, which is related to something else. Right, and then the single nucleotide substitutions that I told you about, they have different levels of repression depending on the base they are affecting, as you would expect. And they also have slightly different levels of expression in the presence of IPTG, in the absence of the LAC repressor. So these blue bars are a bit different. And this is another constitutive mutant that doesn't have the LAC repressor at all, and it's more of a control, but as you can see, it has the same expression as the induced wild type. And this is a permease mutant, which has the same, I'm going to show you later, it has the same levels as the wild type. Right, so just to keep in mind that different LAC binding site, and this is the name of the binding site, LACA1, have different expression values, both in the presence and in the absence of the LAC repressor.
Do you have any idea if this would be true for the other two binding sites?
I would suspect for one. So one is upstream. So one is here, and I would not expect it to have an effect, but I don't know. You never know. The other is within the coding region of LAC-Z, and probably it would have a stronger effect. But there's probably data out there about mutations there, but I don't know. The data I'm going to show is expression, as I told you, and fitness. So fitness was always measured in competition with the reference strain, and the reference strain does not have any of the LAC genes. Fitness is just just as before, 1 plus the selection coefficient, where the selection coefficient is the difference in growth rate between strains. So that turns out to be the ratio of, so the NF is the final number of bacterium of one type, in this case, so let's say a mutant type, after competition, and NI before competition, and for the reference, the same thing. And these have different phenotypes, and particularly the LAC phenotype is different, so they can be followed before and after competition. And so this is the fitness values here without IPTG, so in just this minimal medium with glycerol. So this is fitness, as I told you. One means the fitness is identical to the reference, which is this one that doesn't have any of the LAC genes. And this is the Lexi expression. Now, this scale is different from what I showed you before, because it's the same numbers, but now normalized to the wild-type expression. So normalized to the maximum wild-type expression. So one means that it's the same expression as the wild-type when it's fully induced. And so most of the mutants, as I showed you, still have some repression. So that's why many are in the towards the left of the expression. And two mutants, one is the LACI mutant, the other is one of the constitutive mutants, the one with highest expressions, have the wild type, more or less the wild type expression, and perhaps a bit more. So as you can see, there is a decrease in fitness with expression, as other people have measured and as would be expected. Now there are some points that, so it tends to be linear, but there are some points here that I cannot explain, could be a number of things. But so there is a decrease in fitness due to protein expression, as has been previously measured. Now when IPTG is added at 1 millimolar, this is what happens. So now many of the points are shifted to the right, because again, some of the mutants are still repressed. So when you add IPTG, their expression is increased, and their fitness is really decreased. And so IPTG is affecting fitness in these mutants, and it's not just a shift of the whole of all the points, it's a change in the slope of the dependence, meaning that IPTG is affecting fitness in a manner that depends on the expression itself. And the question is now, what could be causing this decrease in fitness? It's certainly one of the LAC genes, because as I told you, it depends on expression, because the slope is changed. And that also, if you remember from the beginning, and I think I have a slide here. No. Yeah. So, right. And the other thing, and I think this is out of order, I'm sorry. Yeah, what I want to show you is this. So what could be causing this decrease in fitness in the presence of IPTG? So as I told you, LACZ is not known to interact with IPTG. I mean, I think they bind, but it doesn't. There's no reaction. LACY, the LAC permease, is known to transport IPTG. So this is the likeliest candidate and the one I tested. So I took the wild-type strain and I deleted the LAC permease. This strain is still induced in the presence of 1 millimolar IPTG, because this is a really high concentration. So the amount of IPTG that goes through other channels independently of the LAC permease is enough to fully induce a LAC permease mutant.
Sorry, I'm sorry if you said this and I missed it, but this fitness number, what is the meaning? What means 0.7? What should I think that means?
So this is exactly the ratio of the growth rate of the mutants over the reference.
It's enormous. Just expressing this stuff is making them so much less fit.
In the presence of IPTG, yes. In the absence, it's about 10%. In the presence of IPTG, it goes really low. Yes.
But even 10% is...
Yes.
So what fraction of all proteins is LACZ in this?
So LACZ is on the order of 3%. I didn't measure it, but other people have. It's not that high. So about 3%, and then there are the other proteins, but they're even smaller than LACZ. So the idea, and there are some data pointing to it, that this cost of the expression has to do with just the fact of the ribosomes are taken into this LACZ and they're no longer available to other proteins, and that causes a high decrease in fitness. That it's not just the amount of protein expressed, it has to do with this redistribution of resources. But I don't have a good answer for you.
So how many copies are in the cell? I forgot. This is on a multi-copy plasmid? Or?
No, this is in the chromosome. This is single copy of the gene, yeah.
Do you know that the reference is not changing its growth?
I know that because I tested it. I looked at the growth rate of the reference with and without IPTG, with and without 1 millimolar IPTG, and there is no difference in growth rate that I could detect.
So you didn't
standardized against the reference, but instead just looked at absolute fitness, you'd see the same kind of pattern?
I would expect so. I didn't do it for all mutants, I just did for the wild type, and it's the same scale. But yeah, I would expect the same.
What I mean, okay, so I guess, I mean, I'm looking now at these numbers. You also have in the blue at the guys that are very low, like C, you have some guys that are as low in fitness as the guys that are very high, right?
Yeah.
So there are some other things that are causing actually quite a huge change in growth rates, right?
Yeah, so especially this one, I don't have a good explanation for it. It could, so I build these mutants, and it's quite possible that during this process of building, there could be other mutations that happen in the genome. I do my best to control for them. I, for example, put the wild type. So I built a wild type in the same way as I built these, and that had no effect. So the method itself doesn't introduce artifacts all the time. So there could be something else why these mutants are low, and I don't know why.
Is this for 1 millimolar IPPT?
Yes.
Could you change this configuration and see that?
Yeah.
Does it have sort of...
So fitness decreases in a quick way until about 200 for the wild type. Fitness decreases until about 200 micromolar of IPTG, and then it sort of saturates, the cost saturates. And the expression actually, so you only need about 50, I think, or 30 or 50 micromolar of IPTG to fully induce the operon. But even increasing IPTG after that continues to decrease fitness until about 200 micromolar, and then it's the same. I used 1 millimolar because it's the standard that, so it's comparable to other works.
Is IPTG poisoning?
Right, that's a good question. We don't know. At least in low concentrations, it's not poisonous because, as I said, even without the lac permease, the reference strain is able to take in IPTG through other channels, and its growth rate is not affected. So it's not poisonous at 1 millimolar concentration, let's say, but the amount of the IPTG that the lac permease is able to bring in is much higher than 1 millimolar, and it could be toxic then. I'm going to talk a bit more about why this is. So as I said, the likeliest candidate is the lac permease, and indeed it was so. So I built a mutant that doesn't have the lac permease, and so its fitness in the absence of IPTG is the same as the reference. As it's not plotted, but that's what would be expected. But now, when 1 millimolar of IPTG is added to this mutant that only doesn't have the lac permease, then its expression of lac Z is still the same as the wild type. So deleting the lac Y gene doesn't affect expression of the lac Z, which is upstream. It was expected, but it's good that it is true. As I said, deleting the lac permease removes this extra cost of IPTG, so the lac permease mutant is here. So it seems to be only paying the cost of producing the lac genes, and it's not paying the cost of IPTG. So it's something to do with the lac permease and its activity.
And this mutant is missing the gene on the chromosome, or is it the stop codon one?
It's missing the whole gene. So I deleted somewhere after the first or second codon, and before the first or the second to last codon.
So you don't know if it's the mRNA already or if it's the protein that is making the difference?
I cannot see, in principle, no, but I don't think the messenger RNA, I can think how the messenger RNA interacts with IPTG. But I can think of how the protein interacts with IPTG. Yeah.
Sorry, so in principle now there is no IPTG inside the cell?
There is. We know there is because the mutant is fully induced. We know there is IPTG inside the cell, But there should be the same amount of IPTG as with the reference strain. Yeah, because IPTG goes through other channels. This is known. Yes, and this is. So clearly, the extra fitness cost has something to do with the activity of the lac permeate. So that's all. And so this is where we try to figure out. Right. Before I go, there's one last thing now that's out of order. So there is this extra fitness cost in the presence of IPTG related to the lac permeate, and more importantly, fitness appears to be. The decrease in fitness appears to be linear in the absence of IPTG, but it appears to be nonlinear. You couldn't plot a straight line that would go through these group of points and these in any way. So this appears to be faster than linear, this decrease in the presence of IPTG. So can we explain this? So, as I told you, IPTG goes through the lac permeate, and this is a proton symport mechanism. So E. coli keeps a low proton concentration inside the cell membrane, the inner cell membrane, and then it uses that difference in concentration to uptake things, among other processes. But this is one of the things it does. So in these symport transporters, and there are more in the cell, they take up their whatever their specific substrate is and one proton. And this is done at some, And this is done at some rate, which we're calling gamma here. So these are taken in and highly concentrated inside the cell. And so clearly this has something to do with what's going on, because the lac permeate is the one responsible for the fitness cost in IPTG. There is also expression of the lac genes, as I said, and this happens at some rate for each mutant, and that depends on whether they're induced or not induced. And then the growth rate itself, so let's say if IPTG is toxic inside the cell, or if the amount of protons brought in are toxic inside the cells, they are expected themselves to depend on growth rate. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that, but just think that as the cells grow faster, they dilute their internal molecules. And if the amount of internal molecules affects fitness, you have here a feedback loop between these two things. And this is what I mean, and I guess this is impossible to see. But so let's say you have a mutant that is growing, that doesn't produce a lot of proteins and is growing reasonably fast. Let's say it takes up one, in this case, two molecules of IPTG per time unit, whatever that may be, and then it divides those, whatever it uptakes, to the daughter cells, which again take up IPTG, and which again dilute it, and so on. So this leads to some stable concentration, so some stable state concentration of IPTG inside the cell. Now, if a mutant is growing slower, let's say because it's now producing more of the lac permeases, it will still uptake, in this case, twice as many as the other one, but because it's growing slower, before it divides, it will uptake more IPTG than the previous example. And so it will divide it among their cells, and so on. And again, it reaches some stable concentration. But the important thing is, even though it only produces twice as many lac permeases, the concentration of IPTG inside the cell will be more than twice the concentration of this fast-growing mutant. So this is what I'm just very simple mechanism that I'm trying to say, that the concentration of internal molecules depends on the growth rate, and if the growth rate depends on the internal concentration of molecules, which seem to be the case, then there is a feedback loop here. And an increase in the production, and this is also true for the uptake of, an increase in the uptake, in this case, of IPTG, but it's also true in the case of protein expression. An increase in the production or uptake leads to a nonlinear increase in the concentration because of this growth rate dilution. And so this leads to a clear example where phenotype and growth rate, and remember here the cell's fitness is defined as the growth rate, so fitness and phenotype interact in some way. And so the relevant parameters, as I said, so that we are looking at protein production, which is given by alpha for different mutants, the transport via the lac permease, which is this big gamma, which is given by the transport rate for each permease, and number of permeases, which of course depends on the protein production and also on the growth rate because of what I told you. And the concentration of IPTG inside the cell, which seems to be the source of the extra fitness increase. Again, IPTG or protons, we can tell. So this also depends on the growth rate again. So there is a double dependence on the growth rate for the concentration of IPTG, because growth rate affects the concentration of permeases and the concentration of IPTG directly.
So this means we must be in a regime where not all lac eyes are saturated for binding IPTGs, right? Because I can easily imagine that the number of lac eyes relative to IPTGs is such that it doesn't really matter if you change a bit the concentration of IPTG, they're still all bound to change. Apparently you would not be in that regime.
So I'm very much convinced that IPTG, there's more IPTG than permeases. Because, so the cost, so the decrease in fitness is saturated, I know this. So I use 1 millimolar, but if I use 500 micromolar, it would be the same fitness. So the permeases should be saturated. Now I'm not sure I follow what you...
The lac eye is not saturated.
The lac repressor. It is, as well, because I think I don't get your point yet. But so here you can see how the lac I is saturated. So the expression of the wild type with 1 millimolar IPTG is the same as the expression of when lac I is not there. So this is a mutant that doesn't have the lac repressor, and this is the same. Maybe you cannot see very well here that it's the same, but this is the same expression. Yeah, sorry. So, but yeah, it's and
but it's the same. Okay.
Yes, and the saturation is very quick. 1 millimolar is an overkill, I'm aware of that.
Then I guess I don't understand what is the relevance of this growth rate dependent dilution of the IPTG concentration within the cell? What is the relevance of that?
Because so there is a fitness cost with IPTG. And it seems it's related to its transport. So it could be toxic inside the cell at high concentrations. So it could be some direct effect.
But you're saying it's getting in anyway.
Yes, right. It's getting in anyway through other channels, but at much lower concentrations. So it goes through somewhere else as well. The data about internal concentration is very messy. But so we can probably think that when the lac permease is not there, the internal concentration is 1 millimolar, which is the external one. When the lac permease is there, then it's really, really concentrated. It's much higher. So it could be not toxic at 1 millimolar and then toxic at 100 millimolar. It's very hard to test this.
Right, so the cell is really screwed by the fact that it's trying to pump in a food that it actually cannot process.
Yes, so it could be, and again I have to say, any mechanism that depends on concentration will work in this way. For example, if there are pumps that then get rid of the IPTG, they could be the source of the cost as well. They would also depend on the concentration. And again, the proton, it could also be the proton, so without... If not for the lac permease, then IPTG would get in without any entry of protons. With the permease, there's also the protons coming in. So it could also, so whenever I say concentration of IPKG may be toxic, I could also be saying concentration of protons or pH may be toxic. Okay, so this is the parameters that we think are relevant for fitness here. And so another way to show this is that, so you have some these two phenotypes, which are protein expression and activity of the lac permease. So in this case, it's really the transport. And we know they interact because the more transport you have, the more protein production you have, at least in the for low concentrations of IPTG, but then it saturates very quickly. And then because these affect fitness, they lead to a decrease in fitness, and then this decrease in growth rate then leads back to a strong, even higher concentration of protein. So you have this feedback loop. And so fitness, we can express fitness as a function of the expression rate, so which is one of the fitness costs. This is why they have one minus, because it's always costs here. We found no benefit here for IPTG. So fitness depends on the amount of protein expressed and on this big gamma, which if you look back is the total activity of the protein, and also on growth rate, because it seems to be related to the concentration of IPTG or protons. Either way, it should be in this form. A and B are just fitted parameters which will fit to the data. And so now that we have this model, we can plot what we expect the fitness landscape to look like. And this is it. This is just a plot of what I showed you before. This is fitness as a function of protein activity, total cell protein activity, and the amount of protein production. So there are two solutions to this fitness equation I showed you. One is unstable, which is down here, and then there's the stable one. I'm going to talk first about here, the stable one. As you can see, the fitness decreases very rapidly with protein activity, which is what we saw of this faster than linear decrease in IPTG. This is a compound of both having more lac permeases and having them pumping more IPTG. The points are the experimental data, and the lines represent different what we expect for different mutants. Now, the unstable solution, so this is just if cells happen to start growing very slowly, such that their growth rate or fitness is below the below this second solution, then they are not able to dilute IPTG fast enough, and they keep concentrating it until they stop growing. If they are above this solution, then they, as they grow, they start diluting more and more IPTG, so they feel less of this cost, and they go to the stable solution here. And the striking feature here is that if the protein activity or the expression are very high, cells are just not expected to grow in IPTG. So this brings this extinction threshold. If you go too fast towards the cliff, you fall and have fitness zero. And this is what one of the things we learned from looking at this fitness as a function of phenotypes, and one of the big predictions we can make. Another way of looking at this is that the So again, we have these phenotypes which depend on the growth rate in this way, but we also know how the genotypes and the environment affect these phenotypes. So we know the mutations we introduced and the mutants we followed, and we know the environment that we put. So this is one way of introducing environment into the fitness landscape. We know the concentration of IPTG and how it affects the relevant phenotypes. And so we can now plot fitness as a function of the environment and of the genotype. So now here, genotype is really defined as, so what's plotted here is the maximum expression of the of each mutant. So it's like one parameter that depends only on the sequence, and that's why we call it genotype. And then the environment. And again, it's the same. It's the same equation, same parameters, just different plot. You still see this extinction threshold in these two solutions. Now it's different. It's has a different way to look at it. So it's not the cliff is not so obvious, but it's here. If the IPDJ concentration is very high or the expression is very high, cells are not expected to grow. And the different mutants are again are plotted here as lines. And what happens is that, as you can see, there are different fitness functions for the different genotypes. So the way that the genotypes depend on the environment, so the way that strains depend on the environment depends on their genotype. This is a gene by environment interaction. So by looking at, again, the relevant phenotypes, and we can plot the fitness landscape and see what it emerges from there.
Excuse me, what are the gray bars?
So this is so you can see the distance to the the points are the data, and this is so you can see the distance to the surface. So these data, the graph I showed you before with points were just for the 0 and 1 IPT, 1 millimolar IPTG. This is data for the wild type in different IPTG concentration, and that's other mutants, the same thing.
I mean, I don't know, it's very hard for me to judge if this is really a, you know, matching fit at all, right? I mean, I think the model sounds very plausible, so I'm, inclined to believe it. But I don't know if the data basically shows it.
So I don't have the plots. The data we used to fit was exactly the graph I showed you. So this is the data we used to fit. And the line I can show you later. We have this, of course, where the line goes here. It follows this curvature. So what we can say with confidence about this model is that it explains the pattern of the data. It will not explain, I think, all of the values of the data. It's not meant to explain everything that's affecting fitness here, just the most important, or what we think are the most important parameters.
Yeah, can one see the extinction threshold from one of these plots, one of these 2D plots?
From the 3D plots?
The 2D, for these plots.
The thing is, I don't have mutants that express, to test this, I need a mutant that expresses more of the lac permease, and I don't have that right now. So all we can say for now is that the model fits the data, or the data fits the model. But I don't have a clear demonstration of this extinction threshold.
Is it possible for you to look at, let's say, single cell variation, so to do it on a plate and see, that some guys went extinct and others grew?
That would be very good, because I haven't done that. I need a different reporter, for example, because you cannot follow XZ under a microscope. So about the extinction threshold, and it's possible that we will not see the extinction threshold exactly because we expect variability within the population. So if this makes sense, then very little differences in growth rate between isogenic strains will lead to increased because they will lead to very different concentrations of IPTG inside. So a lot of within population variability is expected. So if you look at a strain that should be beyond the threshold, it could be that we still see it growing because many, but very slowly, because the slowest growing mutants would be, we wouldn't see them anymore, and we would only see those guys that are lucky that are able to grow very fast. And we could see this by looking at single cells. So that's something that I'm quite interested in.
Are you sure after growing your mutants, so the population is monomorphic, and you're looking at this, and your first built mutant.
Genotypically.
Yeah.
So how I do it, I build these strains. There is one final step where I have to select one mutant that grew on my select. You know, there's a selection plate that tells me this is the genotype I want. I pick it, I grow it for a very short time, and I freeze it. So this very short time is on the order of maybe 5 generations. As best as I can tell, there are no more mutations, sorry.
Have you ever tested your mutants also in the presence of lactose, so where they could have
yes.
beneficial effects?
Yes. So I have that. Nice. So let me finish, and then I go to that, to lactose. So what can we learn about incorporating phenotypes into fitness landscapes? So one thing, we can make predictions beyond the genotypes that we measured. And we can show that the phenotypes themselves are epistatic with each other. Changing one may change the other. We can incorporate the environment in a way that we can actually predict where it goes by increasing the IPDG concentration. Or if you tell us maybe a different galactoside that has a slightly different cost function, we can tell you where this threshold is for that galactoside, for example. One would think that maybe phenotypic landscapes are smoother and less dimensional than genotypic landscapes. So plotting this as a function of the phenotype removes all the complications of the genotype-phenotype map. But nevertheless, they may be smoother, but they still show striking features, which perhaps if we had plotted this against genotypes, they wouldn't be there. So, and in this particular case, the striking feature is an extinction threshold. So I'm going to show you in a bit. Lactose has the same cost as IPTG. So, how much of this is relevant for nature? IPTG is not a natural; it's not found in nature, but lactose is. So, and I can show you lactose also has a cost like this, but it also brings a benefit. So that's another level of the story. And this would be another dimension in this landscape, this benefit. And I can tell you a little bit more about it later. We're just trying to play around with it. The thing is, when you add the lactose, the cliff is still there, but it's different in the parameter space. So we are looking at that, and there seems, and this is very preliminary, so I'm not showing anything, there seems to be no optimum expression value within this context. We're still looking more carefully. And keep in mind, this is one particular operon in one particular bacterium, but actually there are many more transporters that work like this. So they could have the same sort of landscape. And what does this mean for the whole population? As I said, you have at the single cell, you will have an amplification of the phenotypic variability that's already there. So if there are little changes in protein concentrations inside the cells that affect growth rate, then this will really increase them, and you can lose part of the population. So this is one way to maintain variability, although phenotypic, but inheritable. This is important too. And we see strong epistasis between mutations. So in this case, it was synergistic epistasis between deleterious mutations, because this is faster than linear decrease in fitness. But also, because the coupling between mutations is only in growth rate, we also expect epistasis with other mutations, which only affect growth rate. And that's it. I can show you the lactose. So when you add lactose for the wild type, I have here the wild type, the lac repressor mutant, the lac permease mutant again, and this is a special mutant that doesn't have lac V and doesn't have the lac repressor. So it's fully expressed, but lac V is not there. And what happens, so this mutant cannot use lactose, so there is no benefit for lactose. So again, for the wild type, this is the same values I showed you before, in medium without any lactosides. When you add 1 millimolar of IPTG, its fitness decreases, as I showed you before. When you add the same amount of lactose, so now this is still this minimal medium has glycerol, but it also has 1 millimolar of lactose, then its fitness is really much higher than the reference. The reference cannot use lactose, so this is the advantage brought by lactose. The lac repressor mutant also has an advantage, as expected. The lac permease mutant doesn't have this advantage, and that's because it cannot bring in lactose fast enough to activate its genes and use it, so there is no advantage of lactose. But when lac-Z is not there, there is, again, a decrease in fitness to no lactose. So this is no lactose, this is lactose for this mutant. So lactose also brings in the same kind of cost as IPTG. This, yeah. Okay, I'm done.
Just another one. General question. Actually, before your work, the only papers I knew about the effect on phenotype were those neural networks on the RNA level. Mm-hmm. And I have these nice structure of neural networks, and of course there was benefit mutations and deleterious mutations. So is that possible that you can actually extend the dimensions of your graph and see these neutral networks?
Yes, but extending the dimensions, so maybe putting other phenotypes, so like lactose or other, yes, so that should be, so if we now add, let's say we are not only analyzing lac-Z, we are analyzing another operon. Now, yeah, now we have, we could have four dimensions, and it's possible that you would have very interesting landscapes there, which more or less neutral, I cannot say. It would depend a lot on how these things, the parameters and how they fit into each other. But yeah, that would be the way to go, I think. But difficult.
I'm not sure. I'm sorry.
It's also true that the projection on the phenotypes gets rid of a lot of the neutral mutations. So in some sense, this projects on the axis where hopefully it's non-neutral. That's another way.
So I'm not sure I understand your argument why phenotype fitness landscapes should be smoother than genotype fitness landscapes. Is that because you remove all pleiotropy? You just look at this phenotype, and it's by definition, this is the only thing that can affect fitness. If you look at, a unidimensional relation where if you would look at genotypes with pleiotropic effects on multiple phenotypes, this relation becomes much more complex, or is there another reason?
No, it's just, I didn't think much in that respect. I just kept thinking that how the mutations affect, mutations here will affect expression. Uh-huh. And they themselves are epistatic on each other. And I remove that level. So that's why I think it's smoother. Just because, so yeah, it's known that different mutations have different weights on the repression and on the expression, and I think by removing that, the landscape is smoother. But I never tried to plot it, and yeah, and it would be more dimensional.
So what I found very interesting that I never knew that words is that the actual to eat this food like lactose,
yes,
you actually have to pump an intracellular concentration that's much, much higher than what it is actually at in the environment.
That's right.
And then second, this IPTG, it's like sort of like wax fruit, right? It looks like food to the cells,
right,
but it turns out it isn't, right?
Yeah.
And that's really what hurts them.
Yes,
so
that's right.
Exactly. Is it possible that there are in nature many, like compounds that bacteria may make that may look like food to other ones, and they cannot process it, so it's actually acting like a toxin to them, and they pump it in?
Okay, could be. I never thought
about
that.
Or is this IPTG some freak thing that things
happen? It is a freak. Well, it is a freak made in the lab, and the bacteria can't use it because there's a sulfur molecule there, and they can't break this thing, and they cannot use it. But you could think that it could, if it's easy to make these molecules, you could think that other bacteria can use it as weapons. It could be. But there are no known cases that
there are no antibiotic strategies that want to do something like this, right?
I don't think so. No, I don't know. No.
Because, you know, you actually show that, well, according to the analysis, there's extinction, right?
Yes.
If you put too much of it,
yes.
That's rather slow, right? It has to be a very, very flat process on over many generations until they get to this cliff.
Yeah. And all you have to do is get rid of the permease and the cost is gone. Of course, you stop being able to use lactose.
Right.
So, and it's funny that in nature you often see lac Z, but you don't see lac Y so often. So people look for the lacopron, and there is never lac Y and no lac Z, and there is often lac Z without lac Y. So that's an interesting point. Also, the lac permease seems to be under stronger selection than lac Z in the looking at a diversity in population. So all this points out that, yeah, this may be. These transporters may be under very strong selection because they cannot pick up just anything they find, which would be bad. They have to pick up the right things.
I have a very basic question. Mm-hmm. From the very beginning, you said that to measure the fitness, you make the wild type compete with the mutant or vice versa. The first transparency.
Not exactly the wild type, but yeah. I don't know, maybe here.
Yeah, this is
all I have. Yeah.
Is there a competition?
Yeah, it's a competition. It's not exactly the wild type. It's a strain that, for this purpose, it was better to have this strain that doesn't have any of the lac genes, so it won't respond to IPTG. And I measure that. And there's no, as far as I can tell, there's no effect.
Why is the competition necessary? Why could you just see the growth rate of the just one type, measure how it increases over time, then take the mutant and do the same? Why do you need to put the two together?
Because I could do that, you're right, and the results should be the same. But I want to do this in the context of understanding how much better or worse these are competing with each other. So I want to measure fitness really directly in competition so that if I, for example, next do an evolution experiment, this is exactly how selection acts during the whole growth phase and when bacteria are put together. It's also just easier. This is actually just easier than making a growth curve, and it immediately gives you the difference between genotypes. You don't have to measure one and then the other with some whatever fluctuations there may be. It directly, in one way, gives you the difference between growth rates.
But the reason I'm asking that is because when you put, let's say, the mutant, it might be that the growth rate of the strain, of the reference strain, becomes different. It's actually because of the presence of something else in the medium. It doesn't matter for you, but you say that.
Yeah, so if there were some effects, it would be good to know them as well. But really these mutants are, their only difference is in this gene. I build them. So I don't expect any weird cross-feeding between them because the only mutations there are in this lac operon, and I can't see how that could be. So, but we did do the control with just looking at growth rate, and it fits with fitness, so we use fitness.
So you did this at like 50-50 concentrations?
Yeah.
Because you might, if you're interested in the evolution of the system, then the mutant would start out, and it's rare.
Yeah, that's right.
So another way that you can approach that would be to set it up highly biased towards the wild type and see if they can invade.
Yeah, although I would, so, no, I think
it's negative, so you're using it, it's not.
You may or may not get the same thing because it depends on, you know, because it's the whole set of individuals that's shaping the environment. And so the invasion criteria aren't necessarily the same as the criteria to persist once you come to equal frequencies.
You mean I could be frequency dependent?
Yes.
But in what way? I mean, these strains are, if they interact in some active way, yes. But then the whole calculation is nonsense.
Yeah.
Well, if they interact, yes. But also if they interact indirectly with changing the environment, then the rare dye can't really change the environment because it's so outnumbered.
Right, but if those kind of things matter, then to measure fitnesses like this, and then
we need another measure of fitness.
We need a whole different way
of looking at the problem. That's not the point, actually, the question. So.
Okay, yeah, so so I'm trying to remember. I tested a few things in the beginning. I don't remember if I tested the frequency specifically. But I have no reason to think that there is any really frequency dependence in this system. And again, I looked at the growth rates and they fit. So that really points out that whether they're alone or with this reference, that really the only difference is the lac operon. There's no reason to think that there is any interaction, as far as I can tell.
Because another deviation could be that there are effects on, say, the lag period or the stationary phase period where the fitness produce not the exponential growth rate.
So I don't think there is I don't think the stationary phase would be a big problem. I think if there would be differences in the lag phase, those would be very important because, you know, the stationary phase, already most of the divisions happen, the differences in frequencies are already there, so that's not a big deal. But the lag phase, yes. And I measured the wild type with and without IPTG, and that's a very big fitness difference according to this measure. And the lag phase didn't look different as much as I could look at. So I don't know. Yeah. Yes.
So the other thing, these guys grow up to stationary phase, right? Mm-hmm. So they're sort of using up the food in the environment.
Yes.
So the isn't there some subtle nonlinear effect here that if you're competing, if the reference is competing with a guy that's very good, mm-hmm. and they're both growing pretty fast, mm-hmm. then they're done eating the food faster than when you're growing it. The reference with a slow guy, right? So the effective number of generations that you're growing for is not the same.
Same number of generations.
No.
But not the same amount of time. I mean, there's just food for say a certain number of cell doublings.
So this is a very good question, which maybe if we have some time in this program, it would be nice to go into how to measure fitness in a lab. Here I can tell you the fitness difference calculated in this way is the difference in growth rates over the wild type growth rate. It's all, in this case, the reference, sorry. The difference over the reference growth rate. And that's not a problem because you're measuring this growth rate difference and yes, the wild type will divide more or less depending on the fitness of the other guy, but then you standardize by the number of divisions that the wild type had.
It's not obvious.
I agree, but this is how the measure is. Okay, it's the difference in growth rate standardized by the wild type growth rate.
But the total number of generations should be the same.
Yes, the total number of generations of the population is the same. But it's true that if the competitor is fitter, the reference will grow less. That's clear. But then if you standardize it, you get rid of that problem.
Should we actually say that sometimes in the portfolio lounge discuss about exactly how to measure fitness?
I think that's a great idea.
Good.
Nice afternoon discussion. Yeah, it should be today because you are leaving tomorrow afternoon. So.
The day after coffee.
After coffee?
Before the wine and...
There's no wine and cheese today.
No, took it away.
Took it away from us.
So after coffee, we go to the
portfolio. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Thank you for thinking. I'll try to. Maybe we
can also make it live and bring our own wine.
Yeah. So, five.
Five is wine.
Five, isn't that okay? Okay.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah.